This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, here we go on this Saturday morning. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. It is so good to be back in the saddle along with you. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. As always, at the top of our program, we want to hear from you. We want to connect. We're live on social media at E Radio Sports. You can email the show, chime in on the conversation, info@eradiosports.com. My producer hanging out with me in studio, of course, is Sean Mapes. We've got an incredible program. We're going to do a full recap of the 2022 NFL draft. Also, college golf postseason play is underway for the men and the women. We're going to talk about that with one of our guests. And we're also going to continue to keep you covered for our NBA playoffs. So, Sean, we want you to weigh in on the conversation. What is perhaps your biggest surprise so far of postseason play in the NBA?
The biggest surprise, especially coming out of the first round, has got to be how tightly contested the Memphis Grizzlies and the Golden State Warriors, two games in Memphis, have been so far in the series. Obviously, you got the Warriors, the championship pedigree that those three, four guys have from making the finals five straight years. And then to be pushed to the limit to against this team, the Memphis Grizzlies, that really had to struggle to beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. You could even say the Minnesota Timberwolves lost that series more than Memphis won it. But it really goes to show that in the playoffs, it's just so much about matchups. And John Morant's really raised his game because Golden State really doesn't have anyone that can guard him. Steph has never been the fastest, fleetest of foot, especially on the defensive end. Klay Thompson's still recovering from all those leg injuries that he suffered. And Jordan Poole is basically an offensive first player. So there's really no guard that can stay in front of John Morant. Now there's no one in the league that can stay in John Morant, but there's no one that can even pretend to do it with the Warriors. So just that series looking like it's going to go seven, it's going to be seven good ones. That's probably the biggest surprise.
And it's been a very physical series for sure, yeah, between these two. They've definitely flipped the switch when you talk about the Grizzlies. I want you to weigh in on, give us a hit. Obviously, we're here in Houston. James Harden, his lack of play and production in postseason. What's that all about?
He just doesn't seem to be physically the same guy. It just, basically this entire season, I mean, I think there might have been a stretch around the new year where he looked pretty good, but he just hasn't looked like the same guy he was even during his time in Brooklyn before he got hurt.
Our NBA conversation, postseason play, will continue with Jonathan Von Tobel, the host of The Edge and senior NBA analyst, after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, we are back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always love to hear from our audience. We're live on social media, many different platforms, at E Radio Sports, info@eradiosports.com. We make it so easy. You can take us anywhere, anytime. Just download our app, Sports Map Radio, and podcastarena.com. Well, our NBA coverage continues, the NBA conference semifinals we're going to get into, and we are so thrilled to have back with us, that is Jonathan Von Tobel, host of The Edge, and he is the senior NBA analyst for VSiN out in Las Vegas. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, the postseason has been fun. It's been exciting. You know, it's a long season. It's the first time we had 82 games in the regular season in a while, so it was really building up to this, and it has not disappointed so far.
Absolutely. Well, there's plenty of highlights from postseason play, so I want to take stock of what you have seen so far. Your thoughts on the teams that look in control of their series and that are on their way to the conference finals.
You know, I've been kind of surprised by, you know, how dominant Phoenix has looked early on in their series with Dallas. Like, this is a rear end kicking to know, like, to it's not putting it mildly either. You know, their offensive rating for two games in non-garbage time minutes, 134.8. They got a plus 18 net rating. They are dominating them on that end of the floor. And this is a Dallas team that actually built its brand since the beginning of the calendar year on a much improved defense, but they're really running Luka Doncic through the ringer. Kirk Goldsberry, who does a lot of great work as a former front office member too in the NBA, had some great numbers on this after the second game. Doncic the screening defender on 19 on-ball screens in the second half of their second game, the third most in any half of his career. The Suns averaging 1.81 points per chance in that second game in those instances. They're just going after Luka. And I don't know if it's a thing where Luka's a bad defender or if it's just he's so exhausted because he's doing so much on the offensive end that he's getting abused there. But this has been, I think, really surprising. Like, I've got a Suns futures ticket. I like this team. But I didn't think it would be this degree of dominance for Phoenix in this series against Dallas. I think that's been one that's kind of stuck out to me. And then the others, look, you know, it's hard to draw a conclusion from Miami, given the fact that Joel Embiid has been injured. We don't know his status of this series going forward. And Boston and Milwaukee seems very even-keeled at this point, kind of what you expected between two teams where there's not much separating them. And I think the other in the Western Conference, you're really intrigued by the fact that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson did not play well in those first two games. In Memphis, and yet still earned a series split and got to bring it back home and now have home court in that series. So these rounds have been pretty interesting, but I think Phoenix is at the top of the list in terms of teams that stick out with how dominant they have been now that they're healthy.
The Suns and the Heat. Jonathan Von Tobel is our special guest, senior NBA analyst for VSiN. Give him a follow on Twitter. Jonathan, connect with our audience, and where can they find you online?
I'm on Twitter, yeah, me, JVT, and up on the website, VSiN.com/JVT, daily write-up throughout the postseason in terms of daily guide previews, daily game previews, the best bets, and the Hardwood Handicappers podcast. Wherever you can find your podcast, you can listen to me there.
Okay, we're in Houston, but we are in the state of Texas, so talk to us some more about the Dallas Mavericks. They obviously are searching for answers before their season slips away. You were talking about the dominance of the Suns, so who or what else needs to step up so they can flip the script? You were alluding or talking about Luka Doncic.
Well, that, and you know, because you don't want to put it so much on Doncic, right? Because Doncic on and off the offensive end has so much to do when it comes to his workload. You know, again, in game two, 35 points, 13 of 22 shooting from the floor, 5 of 10 from 3-point range, while others around him kind of failed to step up, right? Spencer Dinwiddie in game two didn't do much. Reggie Bullock was, I think, their second leading scorer in game two. Like, you need more from the other pieces around you. Jalen Brunson, who was incredible in that first series and keeping them afloat, has disappeared. With this switch all in size that Phoenix has to offer, defensively. So I think you start on the offensive end, you need a little bit more. But on the other end, what was so intriguing, I thought, about this series was, while Dallas was really good defensively in that, you know, as I talked about, that stretch from the beginning of 2022 and onward to the end of the regular season, they did it by playing like a really analytically sound form of basketball, which was cut off the rim, cut off the three-point line, and force other teams to shoot mid-range shots. It worked really well against Utah because Utah wants to get to the rim and they want to shoot threes. And so they forced them to play a brand of basketball which they're not comfortable. But that's not working for Phoenix because Phoenix is so elite from the mid-range area of the floor. They went 21 of 33 in that second game from the mid-range area of the floor. You know, they have two elite mid-range scorers in Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And it's almost like their style defensively, Dallas, is working against them in this series. So, you know, an off-shooting night, you know, you don't want to freak out if they're losing two road games in a series because the cliche is, right, the series doesn't start until the road team wins. So we'll see if that happens for game three. But I think that's what I've been really interested in. Coming into the series, I kind of noted that, you know, these are contrasting styles and it might work against Dallas. And through two games, it has definitely been the case.
Well, when we talk about the Suns, I mean, certainly so many superlatives. You talk about how they're just lighting it up offensively. They set the tone early in this particular series. So my question to you is, are the Suns the best team in the NBA?
You know, I think at this point right now, they are the highest power rated team. They're my highest power rated team, especially now that they're fully healthy. So I would say the answer to that question is yes. You know, Milwaukee without Chris Middleton, of course, in a 1-1 series tie, we don't know how that's going to play out. Boston is a very good team, but still power rated slightly below Phoenix. And you have Golden State on the other end, which I think would probably be your best candidate to maybe say they're the best team in the Western Conference, but they have their own flaws as well. And they just lost their best on-ball defender in Gary Payton for a month because of a broken elbow. So I would say, yes, at this point, Phoenix Suns are the best team in the NBA.
You know, 3 years ago, the Phoenix Suns hired Monty Williams. Just give us an assessment of the job that he has done. I loved listening to him in some of his interviews. He talks about pushing for excellence every day, but not perfection. And they're figuring it out to get better each and every day. And look at him in the postseason.
Oh, yeah. I love Monty Williams. He's one of my favorite coaches in the NBA at this point. And he's played such a big role in terms of turning this franchise around. And it goes back to that 8-0, if you remember, that 8-0 run in the bubble in Orlando, you know, all that time ago when they were doing that. And they've built on that since. And, you know, adding Chris Paul, that dynamic has worked out really well. His ability to help DeAndre Ayton improve and become a better player, too. Monty Williams is great, you know, and I think, you know, he should win Coach of the Year this year. He should be going on. He should be winning his second consecutive year. I thought he should have won it last year. But Williams has definitely carved out his niche as one of the best head coaches in the NBA at this point. I think he's done a brilliant job for the Phoenix Suns.
What do you think has been the key to his success so quickly?
I'm not sure. Like, I think he's a great X's and O's guy, but it also seems like you mentioned some of the interviews and like some of the mic'd up moments. He seems to really be able to connect with his guys. You know, like there was that great moment last year, I think was at the NBA Finals where they showed the pep talk with him and DeAndre Ayton and his ability to just kind of get mm-hmm. them to continue to move forward and to kind of pull them out of holes if they're down. It seems to be on top of the ability to be a good schematic coach. It seems to be the ability to connect with his guys and actually keep them going in that direction as opposed to just being like the screaming, yelling, pointing kind of guy, right? He really seems to have an authentic relationship with his players, and I think that really helps.
Okay, so we are in the Western Conference. Which team has the edge in this very physical series between the Grizzlies and the Warriors?
You know, so the edge would go to Golden State mainly because they took home court, right? You know, you earned that split in Memphis. Mm-hmm. So now you're going back to San Francisco for two games. You have home court advantage for the series. If you can hold serve at home, you're talking about a 3-1 series lead going back to Memphis. So that would be a very big advantage for them if they can. The loss of Gary Payton II is a really big deal because he's their best on-ball defender outside of a guy like Draymond Green, especially when it comes to backcourt players. And you saw at the end of game two, you know, the Warriors were really struggling to find a guy to put on Ja Morant. They were trying to make it Andrew Wiggins as the primary defender, but the Memphis Grizzlies did a great job of forcing guys like Steph Curry and Jordan Poole onto him in those matchups. You know, when he scored, I think it was the final 13 points of the game for Memphis, many of those possessions were guys like Steph Curry and Jordan Poole guarding him and taking advantage of that Ja Morant was. So I think they are in control of this series. They have the edge in this series, but it's slight. And you also need better performances from guys like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. They were not efficient in any way whatsoever in terms of their scoring in those first two games. Klay Thompson had one of his worst postseason games of his career, both defensively and offensively, in that second game in Memphis. But you would think, you know, generally role players tend to play better. Players tend to play better when they're on their home court. So a change of venue back in San Francisco with the ability to play at home, I would expect that you're going to get a better effort from Klay Thompson and other role players around them. But I think right now you give the Warriors the edge, but I'm not sure how big it is just given the loss of Payton and how we saw them play offensively in those first two games against Memphis.
He is the senior NBA analyst, host of The Edge, VSiN. You can check him out. That is Jonathan Von Tobel. And for our listeners who may want to place a bet on the finals MVP, which player who may not be a favorite would be a smart pick with strong value? What say you, Johnny?
You know, so it's funny because I have a jaded relationship when it comes to player awards. You know, frankly, I just don't trust.
Why is that?
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't trust voters. You know, like I think there's so many times where you see. I mean, this last college basketball national championship game was a really great example. You know, when a guy like mm-hmm. Ochai Agbaji wins, most outstanding player, when there were like three guys that were absolutely the more deserving candidates to win that, but voters tend to gravitate toward bigger names and the best player on the best team. So, I think like when you look down the board and you see a guy like a Bam Adebayo, for example, like 18-1 to win Finals MVP. That might seem tempting, but in a very realistic setting where there's a very limited amount of voters, and if the Miami Heat go on to win the NBA Finals, more often than not, Jimmy Butler is going to win that award if he has just an average series against whoever their opponent's going to be. So when it comes to Finals MVPs, if you're betting this far out, I tend to go a little bit chalkier. So like, pick the team that you think is going to win this thing and go with like a Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns or a Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics or Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks, because more often than not, voters fail to kind of look in the minutia of how a series was actually played and tend to just look at the best player on the best team.
Hey, we are wrapping up our time. Jonathan Von Tobel, senior NBA analyst, VSiN. Check him out. He's joining us at Sports Map Radio Network. So give me a hit. Eastern Conference. Who do you like coming out of the East?
So I've got a really good ticket on Boston to win this whole thing. I like this Boston Celtics team a lot, especially now that they're going to be healthy. And we know Marcus Smart, what's going on with him in terms of his injury as well. But it doesn't sound like a very serious injury for Smart. But as you kind of move forward, you see the way this team plays defensively. They have a dominant wing player, which you need in the NBA today, and Jason Tatum, who can score and defend at a very high level. And they have a really good bench they can rely on, too. I think Boston, at the end of the day, is going to come out of this Eastern Conference. I think they're going to ultimately scrap out a win here against the Milwaukee Bucks, and I think they match up tremendously with the Miami Heat, who have their 2-0 series lead over Philadelphia, who right now, at least, but we don't know the status of Joel Embiid. So I would say Boston is going to be at the top of the list for me in terms of the Eastern Conference.
Host of The Edge, VSiN senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel, has been our very special guest. Appreciate you carving out some time. Thank you, and have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.
Thank you. You too.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big Esports Show. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. The Big E Sports Show rolls on at Sports Map Radio Network. We'd love to hear from you. You can join us on social media at eRadio Sports, podcastarena.com. Take us anywhere, anytime, 24/7. Just download our app, and that is Sports Map Radio. Hey, we're going to continue with our 2022 NFL Draft Recap, and we are so delighted to have back with us, that is Reed Fowler from DraftKings. Good morning, Reed. It's nice to have you with us on this Saturday morning. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. This is it's been a great week. We've been watching the Wells Fargo Championship throughout the week, but we're going to talk about football.
That's
and,
right.
And the draft. It was a sight to behold, right? A lot of trades.
A lot of trades, a lot of selections. So what was the biggest surprise for you in the first round?
Well, Cole Strange. I think that's probably the biggest surprise of anyone.
Yeah.
Because, look, and when we talk about the quarterbacks, there was always a disparity between what historically has happened, right, with quarterbacks and how they've gone in the first round, and just the talent, right? The talent, the scouting of the quarterbacks like Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett. And you know what was interesting? It was actually that most teams, and this is going to sound weird, most teams, quote unquote, did the right thing. They didn't stretch. They didn't overreach for quarterbacks or players. No running backs went in the first round. You know, Breece Hall went, you know, pretty quickly in the second round. You could argue that, you know, pick number 35, I think it was, right, that he went to the Jets. That could have been easily a first rounder. But most teams actually did, you know, they were doing the smart thing.
Now, that's interesting that you bring that up because you talk about most teams doing the right thing. Yeah. There was some that challenged the selection of Kenny Pickett for the Steelers. I mean, do you think he is the heir apparent to Big Ben?
Oh, I think you got to do something, right? I think when you take a look at any quarterback and even taking a late quarterback, meaning third, fourth, fifth round, is always advantageous just because of their upside. But when you take a quarterback in the first round, boy, that guy better be it. And yeah. Kenny Pickett, while he was the most polished of the guys, of the quarterbacks that were coming in this QB class, there are some question marks, right? He's not a guy who's mobile, and that's really where the NFL is going. Even though he is a pure pocket passer, even though most GMs, most scouts, most NFL teams are, you know, they harken back to the we want a pure pocket passer, and that will always be valuable in this NFL and on any team. But when you talk about heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger, well, you got some big shoes to fill. You know, hypothetically, like figuratively speaking and literally speaking, that was a big guy who did not go down. I mean, that's the one thing I remember about Big Ben is that in his first 5 or 6 years, you try to tackle that guy, he's not fleet of foot, but he would not go down. And that's not Kenny Pickett's game, right? That's not really his style. So do I think he's the guy right now? Yeah, but are there quarterbacks potentially next year that could be a little bit better? Possibly.
I was going to say, what's your level of confidence in him as we talk about Kenny Pickett long-term with the Steelers?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm pretty much in a holding pattern with Kenny Pickett. If I had to give him a letter grade, which I think is silly, right? And when people give like draft grades, because it's so contextual, you know, I'm giving him a B. Because I do think that what Kenny Pickett is, and this is what we saw a lot too, right, in this year's draft, that these teams were picking the quote unquote hometown guy, whether it be Kenny Pickett who was in Pitt and him essentially being so close to the Steelers organization, there's a familiarity with Kenny Pickett. I do think that there are situations that if he went to, let's say, Carolina at six, I think that would have been a lot because then you start putting a ton of pressure for Kenny Pickett to solve everything in Carolina, which that they need more than a quarterback, right? That's where you start. That's how you start an organization. But I'll give him a B because especially when you take quarterbacks in the first round, you got the fifth year option, so it makes business sense. And then B, if he plays above expectation, you can do so much with your salary cap because you have your guy on a rookie contract. That's what all of these teams are doing is trying to find their quarterback that they can build around. And if Kenny Pickett can be anywhere from a B-plus to an A-minus in terms of a letter grade for this team. You basically have a good, a good foundation in the Steelers organization that you could go to a lot worse places if you're Kenny Pickett.
Yeah. You know, it's hard not to cheer for this guy because when the pick went down, just to see the emotion for the entire family, it's like you want him to succeed.
Oh, yeah. You see it in Hutchinson when he went to the Lions. You see it with all of these guys, even Malik Willis. I think he was at like a carnival, which is the best place to have your draft party, by the way.
That's creative, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Play those games, and then when you get drafted, now you can basically waste all your money.
And have some cotton candy.
Have some cotton candy to celebrate. So that's why the draft is so cool, right? Because you see these kids and these plays, that's what they are. These kids, sort of right before your eyes, realize a dream. And anybody who plays sports, boys or girls, anybody, right? And they have aspirations of, playing in, and I forget the girl's name, but she was the first a woman to play in the NCAA men's baseball game. And you see those dreams as a little girl or a little boy.
Come into fruition.
When you realize that, it's much bigger than sport, right? And that's why it's, when you see the draft, that's the outside, the romanticism of the draft, that you see these kids and their dreams come true, and we all tried to live vicariously through them, or we harken back to when we got our first gig in media. When you got your first big gig in media, right, you're like, this is
your big
my
break.
Dream realized.
Yeah.
My big break. And that's what you're seeing with these kids. And so it's fantastic to see them.
DraftKings NFL analyst Reed Fowler with us this morning here in Hour 1 Sports Map Radio Network. You got to give him a follow at Reed, R-E-I-D, T Fowler. Give him a follow. Hey, let's talk about some of the New York teams. I want to hear you and have you weigh in on the Jets and the Giants since they each had several first-round picks.
Oh, yeah. I love the Jets. Picks. I think they were smart with what they did. And look, it's hard to lose. It's hard to get a bad grade when you had so many picks inside the top 10, a couple picks inside the top 10. But you take a look at what they did. I think Sauce Gardner is fantastic. I think, when you talk about he and Derek Stingley, they're interchangeable for the top cornerback, coming off the board. And Garrett Wilson from Ohio State, you talk about a pure route runner, a guy that might not be the quickest, off the gate, but someone that is a playmaker. And when you're the Jets, that's what you need now, what you're doing, the same way the Miami Dolphins have tried to do with Tua Tagovailoa, is that you're giving Zach Wilson all the reasons to succeed, that you have all the weapons now to succeed. You have Breece Hall in the back with Michael Carter. You have Corey Davis. You have Elijah Moore. You bring in some veterans at the tight end position. And now you have Garrett Wilson to go along with now people on defense that can help out, give you the ball back. Now, Zach Wilson, you got to go out, you got to win this game for us. You got to do that. You got to, mitigate those turnovers and those mistakes. And he's a sophomore quarterback, so hopefully that works out. But even on the defensive side, Jermaine Johnson, he's someone that I think they were high on. And what they do, that guy could have gone top 10, top 12, and they got him late in the first. So really like the Jets and then the Giants. Kayvon Thibodeau was probably like my second or third favorite player in this year's draft. It's Kyle Hamilton. It was someone that I really, really liked. Jordan Davis, the interior D line out of Georgia was someone that I really, really liked. But when you take a look at what Kayvon Thibodeau can do, he has that Von Miller type of upside, that 18 sack upside. And that's what the Giants so desperately, desperately needed, right? Justin Tuck, Strahan, Olivier Vernon, when he was healthy, they are a defensive line team through and through. And Kayvon Thibodeau hopefully brings that back to the Giants. And Evan Neal, I mean, both of those guys were slated early in the offseason to be the number one pick overall. And they got both of them. So really, really like what they both did.
DraftKings NFL analyst Reed Fowler has been our very special guest at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Reach out, Reed, here in Hour 1, and connect with our audience. Where can they find you online and learn more about DraftKings?
Yeah, so online at Reed T. Fowler. All my articles about football, golf. We're doing stuff in the NFT and the cryptocurrency space, but mostly with sports for me personally, in golf and football, at Reed T. Fowler, or on DK Nation is where you find all of our good work. All my colleagues do fantastic work in every sport. So go over there and find more articles And hopefully you like what you read.
Absolutely. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, we are back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always got to take time to pause and recognize the folks that make it happen at Sports Map Radio Network, and that is Progressive Insurance. They make bundling home and auto so easy. You can learn more at progressive.com. Well, the NFL draft, it is in the rearview mirror, and our next segment, we are going to specifically talk about the Oklahoma Sooners, who had a total of, oh, by the way, seven players move on to the next level. And delighted to have back with us legendary radio host from CBS Sports Radio Network in Oklahoma City. You can dial them in 105.3 and also subscribe to patreon.com/diehardsoonerreports. And that's my dear friend, James Hale. Good morning, James, on this Saturday.
Hey, good morning, E. And yeah, it was a great draft for the Sooners, man. There's no question about it. And, you know, the Sooners are into the offseason now. Coaches are on the road recruiting. OU just announced a big Tier 3 rights deal with ESPN+, which totally signals they're soon going to the SEC. And there's a lot of things going on with OU, even though it's the offseason, but recruiting never stopping in college football now. So,
well, the reason we extended this invitation is we did want you to weigh in and provide a recap from last week. As I mentioned in the open, seven Sooners selected in this year's 2022 NFL draft. And, oh, by the way, that led the Big 12 for the most of any program. Although OU did not have any first-round selections, they did have a big weekend. So what was kind of your takeaway?
Well, it's the 14th straight year OU has had at least four players taken in the draft. That's the longest running streak in college football. So while Georgia deserves all the plaudits and deserves all the accolades they're getting with the five first round picks and 14 players, which is a record, or is it 15 players, a record for an NFL draft, Oklahoma also deserves a little pat on the back for continually, consistently putting players in the draft. That's the recruiting blue blood that you got to have. You've got to have that particular facet of college football recruiting, that you're developing them, you're putting them in a position, they put in the work, OU gives you the resources to get you to the draft. So it was a good take. What's ironic, OU is not noted for their defense, even still. Over the last couple of years, I think Alex Grinch did develop the culture a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So OU played harder. They played with more spirit, but they seemed to backtrack a little bit last year. So maybe they didn't play as well as their talent indicated. As Perrion Winfrey went in the third round, he goes to Cleveland. Delarian Turner Yale, a three-year starter at safety, went in the fifth round of the Denver Broncos. Isaiah Thomas was the second pick in the seventh round. I was surprised that it took so long for Thomas to get drafted, but he's a little undersized in the defensive line, but he's got versatility. He's a natural pass rusher, and the Browns took him. And then, so those guys right there are on the defensive side of the ball, and they all end up in the draft. Michael Woods. You know, Michael had an okay year at Oklahoma. He was a three-year starter at Arkansas, but he's been a four-year starter in college football. And three at Arkansas, one at OU. I was a little surprised he came out. But, you know, he goes to the Browns in the sixth round. It's funny. Cleveland is not doing Baker Mayfield any favors, right?
Yeah.
It looks like he's fallen out of service.
Yeah.
Looks like, you know, they totally don't like him at all. But they love OU. They took three guys in the draft. And so every time a Cleveland Brown took a Sooner, I was going, okay, they really like the program.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what's going on with them and Baker. Uh-huh. Something is, you know, but, you know, so anyway, it worked out pretty well. Marquise Hayes, who started for 3 years at Oklahoma, was the, fifth to the last player taken by the Arizona Cardinals, but he got in. So he was taken. So that was really good. So, this is a good group that went. They had four other. Oh, Nick Benito also went. Benito went in the final selection of the second round. That was the, and Brian Asamoah. So see, there's five defensive guys right there. And Benito went as the last pick in the second round. He's a natural pass rusher. He's a really good athlete. I think that, that the Broncos are really getting a great player there. And Brian Asamoah went in the third round. Brian is a gifted athlete. He's very fast. He's very explosive. He's a little undersized for an NFL linebacker. He'll star on special teams. They can get him up to 330, 335. I think he'll play well in Minnesota. I just find it interesting that more guys on the defensive side got drafted, and yet most people didn't feel, oh, you played great defense last year. And most of us, and I've told you before, yeah, I thought they underachieved on defense. Now, Brent Venables has come in. Ted Roof is in charge of the defense. The whole defensive staff has been turned over. Celebrated defensive tackle coach Todd Bates is running that area. Roof has the linebackers. Jay Valai has revitalized, along with Brandon Hall, the secondary. And they've gone back to Brent's defense, which is more like Bob Stoops' defense in the early days.
Nice.
When he and Mike Stoops were running all that. And it's going to be a different thing, but Brent's played such great defense at Clemson. And I think everybody's pretty excited to see if the defense will actually play better next year. They've lost some good talent off that defense, but talent returns. And now we have a new guy running it in Brent Venables and Ted Roof. It's going to be fun to see how they do on defense this upcoming year.
You've at CBS Sports Radio Network 105.3 Oklahoma City. That is James Hale. Give him a follow on social media at Twitter, jhale24, as we recap the 2022 NFL draft. The 15th straight year, the Sooners produced at least four NFL picks, and that is what one of the longest streaks in the country. I'm just wondering, James, did any of your predictions come true as far as where some of the top prospects for the Sooners ultimately landed and their new destination?
I thought Winfrey was going to go in the first or second round. He fell to the fourth, and I think that had a lot to do with the Grinch system. Alex's system is based on movement, trying to confuse the offensive line. So you're rolling, you're always shifting, you're always trying to make a last-minute move and make that quarterback and that offensive lineman make a rash decision. But it doesn't show you pure straight-ahead power. Can you beat your opponent all the time? And I think even though he had a great Senior Bowl, remember he was named the most valuable player in the Senior Bowl, had three sacks in that Senior Bowl, he still dropped a fourth. And I think that had a lot to do with it. I was happy for Asamoah that he went in the third round. I was happy for Benito. I thought Benito played better in his career at OU than the 64th pick in the NFL draft. But he's kind of a tweener. Is he a rush guy? Most rush guys are 250, 260. Is he a linebacker? Well, he hasn't really played linebacker, so I can understand that a little bit. And again, I think Isaiah Thomas, the fact that he got drafted will get him in the league, and it's going to be up to him. Does he get bigger? Does he get smaller? What does he do? What kind of player does he become? But yeah, I think that's going to be a positive thing. Delarian Turner, Yale's always been undersized. He's always been smart, though. A three-year starter. He can hit you. He's a good open-field tackler. I'm curious what kind of NFL career he's going to have. And I've never thought Marquise Hayes was a great offensive lineman, but he did get drafted, and he is athletic, so we'll see how it goes. But, I think in some ways, some guys were higher, some lower. I'm not trying to be wishy-washy in my answer here.
Uh-huh.
It's just I really thought Perrion was going to go. I even predicted he might go at the end of the first round, and boy, wow. A lot of us were wrong about that. He fell to the fourth, but I think it's a steal. I think he's going to be a steal by the Cleveland Browns. I think they can use him. He's an incredible athlete for a defensive lineman.
The NFL draft, it is over. All 262 selections have been made. What overall would you say? Give us your assessment of the 2022 draft class.
Well, I think it was a great show for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, I just thought the Browns did a great job, and I thought it was amazing how the Georgia Bulldogs is what I'm trying to get to.
Right.
The Browns did a great job with the Sooners and things like that. We were all following the Browns and thinking to ourselves, we don't really like this team anymore in Oklahoma, But now they've got all these Sooners, and so you're looking at it a little bit differently, you know. So, I think that what it's done in college football, though, it's put Georgia on this pedestal. They win a national championship. They have all these guys taken. Alabama's always strong, too, you know. But what it does for Brent Venables moving forward is he gets to tell every recruit, hey, we'll get you to the NFL. If you're good enough, we can get you there. And I think that's the overall thing. I think it's a gamble. Trayvon Walker, who didn't have the production at Georgia, and as some of the others, I thought Aiden Hutchinson is a more solid pick. He reminds me of, J.J. Watts a little bit. I love Stingley at LSU. No quarterbacks. One quarterback taken in the round. It wasn't a great year for quarterbacks. I was impressed that the NFL teams maybe didn't panic. They didn't really start taking quarterbacks to the third round, so that was interesting. But, Georgia has made such an impact, and they're number one or number two in recruiting for 23. They've got 24. They've really got it going at Georgia, and it's going to be interesting to see, especially with Oklahoma going to the SEC in a couple of years. You know, if anybody can stop that juggernaut, they passed, in my opinion, Alabama a little bit in those backroom things we're talking about, recruiting and things. They did beat Alabama last year. It's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward, especially with those two powerhouse programs. Mm-hmm. Nobody puts people in the NFL like those two, and recruits notice that. They don't care about the NIL and stuff like that when they go to Alabama or Georgia. They're thinking NFL, and that's what it's all about anyway.
Our 2022 NFL Draft Recap continues with James Hale after this quick break.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us on this Saturday morning. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Always love to connect with our audience. We're live on social media at eRadio Sports. If you missed any of our interview with James Hale from CBS Sports Radio Network, we'll have it uploaded. My producer, Sean Mapes, makes it happen at podcastarena.com. You know, James, last time you were on the show, we were really fired up because we're getting ready to celebrate the spring game and also the honor of Baker Mayfield and his statue that was going to be unveiled. Did you get a chance to visit with him? And also, just kind of give us the skinny. I mean, what is the future for Baker? Where's he going?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And as you and I talk, he really doesn't know. His rights are owned by the Cleveland Browns. They haven't made a deal for him. Everybody assumed at the draft that would be the prime time place for them to make a move for a team that wanted a quarterback, because Baker would have been the number one quarterback in this draft. Nobody did. They didn't make him out there. Cleveland's trying to find somebody that will pick up the $19 million salary that they owe him. Every team out there wants the Browns to pick up all of that, most of it, some of it. And the Browns don't want to do it. Nobody wants to give up a huge draft choice. So here's the Browns situation, if you ask me. The Browns have signed Deshaun Watson to that crazy contract of $242 million guaranteed dollars that every other team in the league is mad about. Nobody else is guaranteed that much guaranteed money to one player in the National Football League. Now every quarterback wants that. And so every other GM in the league has to deal with this, and they don't want to. And so it's creating Kyler Murray in Arizona, and other quarterbacks are now demanding that, or they want something really close to that. But Watson has these 22 civil cases hanging over him, and who knows if he's going to be able to play at the beginning of the year. Is he going to be able to come to OTAs? Is he going to be able to put the work in? He's not in Cleveland. He's not working out. You don't read about him inviting wide receivers anywhere. He's working on depositions with those 22 civil cases. The thought is he will get suspended anyway. Whether it's 6 games, 8 games, the whole season, he's not going to be playing the whole year. They've still got Baker under contract. If Baker doesn't show up to OTAs, he's going to get fined. The Baker Mayfield I know will not get fined. He'll show up and run laps or whatever. But as long as the Browns have him under contract, they may be looking at it right now thinking, you know what, that's a pretty good fail-safe. if Watson's not going to be eligible, we would have Baker Mayfield. I haven't heard they're going to do that. And talking to Baker, he gave you the indication he doesn't want anything to do with the Cleveland Browns. But here's the bottom line. He doesn't have any leverage. Right. Cleveland owns his contract. They're going to pay him a whopping $19 million, which you and I would say, I'll do anything you want, Cleveland, for $19
million. Sure.
You know, yeah. So, you know, they've got that. You know, that's, and this is all speculation because nobody knows. And Baker literally, in talking to him, he had no idea when he was in Norman what his situation was going to be. And I don't see it any differently as you and I talk today.
And let's back up just a moment. Give me a hit on the spring game. What did you learn, James?
I learned the Sooner Nation is totally behind Brent Venables. I learned that Brent Venables is a total different cat as a head coach than just about any other head coach. He reminds me of Barry Switzer with his enthusiasm for the program, his knowledge and his realization that the fans matter, that the media even matters, that everybody's a part of the program. It was refreshing considering what we went with through with Lincoln and the previous staff. Lincoln closed off everybody. Brent's reopened everything for everybody, former players and everybody. It was a joyous occasion. Now, we're still in the honeymoon, but everybody wants Brent Venables to succeed. Now he's just got to get the team ready for the season and go out and do that.
He is simply the best. CBS Sports Radio Network, dial him in, 105.3. Also subscribe to Die Hard Sooner Reports, Patreon.com, and jhale24 at Twitter. I'm talking about my man. That is James Hale. Have a great weekend, James, and I will see you at regionals in Norman. Thank you.
Hey, look forward to it. See
you. Bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick timeout.